Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
It's that idyllic Canadian scene, the one on all the postcards they sell at the airport. A Muskoka chair placed in front of a glittering lake. A canoe gliding along said lake, its rider pausing to listen to the call of a loon. These are scenes of Canada's natural beauty that, in real life, are only accessible to some people. Those who camp, and those with cottages. Cottages, or cabins to folks anywhere outside Ontario, are meaningful getaways for families across this country, places to unwind and reconnect with nature, with one another. They can also be status symbols. Heck, you've really made it if you can pay taxes and utilities on not just one property in this housing market, but two. Who are cottages really for in Canada? And how does the Canada of 2019, a Canada in which international migration accounted for 80% of this country's population growth, interact with that mythology? I'm Sarah Bosveld, sitting in for Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Toronto writer Elamine Abdelmahmoud recently wrote a super thought-provoking piece on all of this for Cottage Life magazine. Now that the August-long weekend has arrived and the highways are packed like sardines with people headed for the lake, we thought we'd get him into the studio to talk about cottages, racism, colonization, class, relaxation. Hey, Elamine.
Hey, Sarah.
Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, pal.
So tell me about the first time you were invited to a cottage. What crossed your mind?
Right. I was a mere 18-year-old, and a friend of mine, I was in university, and a friend of mine was like, hey, do you guys want to, a bunch of friends, hey, do you want to come to the cottage this weekend? I was like, sure, but what is that?
What is a cottage in general?
Yeah. Listen, like, I'd arrived from Sudan in Canada when I was 12. And
6 years before.
Yeah,
six years earlier. It's not that long.
And in that 6 years, I'd never gotten invited to a cottage, or I don't think I've even really heard the word cottage. And so once the concept was explained to me, I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean you have a whole other property that you don't even go to most of the year, but you go to when the weather is nice to spend time there just to chill and do nothing? I don't understand this concept. So it blew my mind a little
bit. Also, it was on an island, right? Like, you can own an island?
Yes.
Like, that is extra mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing. That is a cottage that I have since returned to every single summer. I go there quite often. Those are our closest friends. And, like, it's a place that's become really dear to my heart. And, like, to me, that transition from, wait, what is a cottage, to, I kind of want this, has been an interesting sort of experience.
Yeah, a bit of a journey, right?
Yeah.
And so this really fascinating piece you wrote for Cottage Life kind of explores that idea of what is the cottage and who is it for, really, and what is the history of that, and the history that we've not necessarily taken any time to look at objectively.
Yes.
So you kind of say, all right, well, cottage country, cottage life seems to be synonymous with white people of a certain class. You know, is that fine? Is there a problem with that? You know, talk to me about that.
So it was immediately kind of apparent to me that every time that I heard the word cottage, it was mostly said by white people that I knew. Those were the people I had the closest relationship with the idea of the cottage. These days, I really love to reference the Baroness von Sketch.
Oh my God, the cottage.
Right, like there's a familiarity in that,
yes.
Right? Like, in the way that they say, like, hey, do you want to go to the cottage?
Yeah, so good.
Please don't cut this.
it's very important that it says that.
But there's this, like, capital C sort of construct of what the cottage is that people seem to understand. And I was just kind of trying to rack my brain why people of color don't have the same relationship to it. It's not just about fewer people of color owning cottages. It's actually just a relationship to what cottages are for. Because ultimately, cottages are for leisure. And leisure varies from culture to culture to culture. And so I started thinking about, and this is what went into the piece, is like talking to people of color who own cottages. And what they told me was their parents never imagined the cottage as like an expression of what they could do with their wealth, because once they acquired enough wealth to exercise that leisure, like feeling good and being relaxed meant sending money back home.
Yeah, so this is like an immigrant experience as well, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
And supporting your kids that way.
That alleviated, that took the weight off the shoulders. It wasn't like, let's go jump off a dock.
Totally. This idea of jumping off the dock was kind of foreign to these people's parents.
Mm-hmm. And so tell me about your experience with leisure, your relationship with leisure as a kid, or your parents, actually. You know, if cottage wasn't even something that you knew existed, like, what did that look like for you as a young person or for your parents?
So, like, for us, like, being leisurely meant, like, spending time with family. It's because, like, when you have time away from the demands of work or the demands of, like, I'm like, generally speaking, like, my parents, my dad owned a convenience store, and then he started driving taxi in Canada. So for him, like, work was a really demanding day. He was, you know, we worked 13, 14-hour days. So when he had time away from work, it wasn't like, hey, let's just go sit and look at a nice sunset. It was...
That might stress him out even, maybe, right?
Totally. Like, the idea of just, like, sitting there and be like, okay, now we're doing nothing. It was a bit foreign. It was about kind of figuring out how to do something as a family. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was coming from.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, for a lot of people, and certainly some people you interviewed, like, it is... The cottage is about family, right? It's, like, it's a place to reconnect. Certainly a place to connect with nature as well. You know, and I think you wrote that you sort of found that a little bit when you visited cottages, too, with your little one.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I've never really thought of myself as a nature person. Mm-hmm. And then slowly but surely being at cottages won me over, being surrounded by nature won me over. And I think there's something about imagining yourself in that space, and then eventually you gain a little bit more ownership over it. Be like, yeah, I can imagine my future as this.
But that brings up, like, a thorny question, right? It's like, who is this for? Who's the cottage for? It sounds like there is kind of this invisible wall called money and also cultural expectations around the cottage, you know? And we know home prices are rising, rent prices are rising all across this country. And so to have that second property and to be able to, pay for gas in your own car, possibly
travel,
like, drive up there, maybe have a boat, you know, and then paying taxes on this property as well.
It
just seems like so expensive. So I guess I'm just sort of wondering, you know, what is that sort of expectation around being able to relax the cottage? How does that nudge up against our ideas of accessibility for those kinds of spaces? So, like, to be able to access nature, you need a lot of money, you know?
Right. It's a high bar just to be able to relax in that space.
Yeah.
Like, the notion that you need to, you know, acquire enough wealth to have a cottage that's beautiful, that you love spending time at, that isn't too much work for you to be at, a boat, and that to be able to travel that distance, like, that is a really high barrier of entry just in terms of wealth before you're able to access all of that. And one thing that was interesting to me when I talked to some of the people that I talked to for the piece, and they said, like, look, we felt a little bit of discomfort because we were, you know, one of the only faces that are, you know, not white in the area. But then as soon as we started talking to our neighbors and we told them that we too were professionals who had these, you know, who come from these backgrounds, have higher salaries, then they became kind of familiar with them.
Yeah, you had a quote from one of your sources that said, cottage ownership is like its own language. It's a completely different language, and I speak it partially now. So,
yes.
But that is also kind of code for, I'm in this class level now, you know?
Yes.
It's about class as much as it is about race.
Yeah, like, these people understand me for,
So tell me about, like, you know, did any of your sources, and maybe you even, like, encounter some, like, racism or discomfort, or, like, do you really feel like, oh, God, I'm, like, not, there are a lot of other white people here, you know? And that's not an uncommon experience, maybe, you know, but out in cottage country, you stop and go get fries at a chip stand or something on the way, and people are en route with their kayaks and their cars.
Listen, in that space, like, if you're a person of color, this one thing that you're familiar with is, like, the look that says, like, nah, you're not really from around here. I wouldn't really expect to see your face around here. And, like, one of the people that I talked to, she said that, like, she felt some discomfort in the closest sort of major town over from her cottage. But then as soon as she got to her own cottage community, that dissipated because those people knew they were among their own sort of class.
Speak the language.
Exactly.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime, Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
It goes a bit deeper than, you know, people from the city who are making money going out there. Mm-hmm. It kind of, you know, I thought about this actually because my in-laws have a cottage that they just sold actually. And I was sitting, you know, Canada Day, another fraught day, right?
Yes.
You know, sitting on this dock thinking, this is not my land. You know, this is not my in-laws'
yes.
land.
Yeah.
Certainly not, you know, beyond the sale of the cottage thing. It's like, this is Indigenous land. You know,
right.
We are all settlers. And so how does this idea of the cottage being synonymous with Canadian identity and culture, where's the clash with that history we have of colonization and also
right.
sort of the immigrant experience interacting with the cottage too?
So I think, you know, in order to have romance about the cottage as a space, I think you need to buy into the concept of, you know, a certain story of Canada's founding as, like, you know, settlers came here and they conquered nature and they suddenly the space was theirs to relax and enjoy.
And now we have this free country that you can all enjoy.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Clean water for some, not all. Yeah.
Precisely. And so for you to buy into that, then you might find cottages to be like an extension of your own sort of fantasies. That makes sense. And I think like part of the reason that maybe people of color might not be buying into cottages in general is that they've never bought into that fantasy because to them, Canada has never been that. Like Canada has been a site of a lot of hardships. And so they know that it's not just you don't just go out there and relax in the wilderness because you conquered it all.
It's a hard place. The wilderness is a tough,
yes.
tough old place.
Exactly.
As beautiful as it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm really interested, too, in the idea of how white cottage owners might respond to the idea of race, you know, racialized people not being necessarily comfortable or feeling that that is their space. You know, you wrote this piece for Cottage Life magazine, which has a broad readership in Canada.
Yeah.
Mostly white people. Did you get any kind of interesting feedback to the piece, or have you had anyone say, well, what's wrong with me owning a cottage? Can't I just go relax at the cottage? You know,
well,
why do I have to make this whole thing, you know?
There was a mixture of response for sure. I think like there were a couple of people that I was told there were a couple of people who were like, you know, this is not for me. Please cancel my subscription to Cottage
yeah?
Life.
Really? Cancellation.
To which I go like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
Don't be sorry, Elmi.
Well, listen. But the vast majority of response has actually been really positive.
Good.
The vast majority of people have been like, hey, I've never really thought about my relationship to race and cottaging. Like that is not something that has crossed my mind a lot. And a lot of people like wrote in with how it challenged their beliefs or their thoughts about how they thought about their own space, which was like really rewarding
to
see.
That's what good journalism does, man.
That's the hope.
That's
also makes you cancel your subscription sometimes.
Like two people,
yeah,
I'm sure. I'm sure it wasn't catastrophic.
Yes.
But it does, butt up against this idea that we have now as we talk about race in new ways in this country and colonization as well of, yeah, like you got to go there to like shake up, like you got to make people uncomfortable too, you know? And so I think that's an interesting idea of feeling uncomfortable about the space that you are mostly supposed to feel comfortable in, you
yes.
know? It's so fascinating.
Which is why I was really grateful for Carter's Life for wanting to pursue this, you know, for wanting to pursue this line of questioning and seeing where the piece takes us, because I think they knew that to have a whole, you know, a more fulsome conversation of what owning a cottage means, like this is a part of the picture. It might have been easier to avoid it, but I don't think that would have done all of us, you know, a service.
I wonder how, as like someone who goes, like when you go to the cottage, having written the story and thinking about it, like, you know, and talking to your friends who maybe are the cottagers on that island, you know, how do they think about these issues now? Like, how do you go about going to frequent a cottage and,
sure.
or maybe own a cottage and have this in your mind? Like, is there something you can do or a way that you can kind of approach it that,
I mean, the sense that I get is mostly just like being mindful of the space that you occupy.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the people that I talked to for the piece was a playwright, Drew Hayden Taylor. And he has a play called, I think it's called Cottages and Indians, or the reverse. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But one of the things that he talked about was it's based on this real life tension in the Quarthill Lakes. James Witung, who's from the Curve Lake First Nation, he began replanting Pigeon Lake with wild rice because wild rice has no chill.
It's kind of swampy, right? Like, yeah, it will it's like mess up your waterfront.
Totally. It'll mess up your boat for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And so the cottagers in the area started complaining. And Witung's whole point is like, look, when settlers came over and brought their food, a whole bunch of new diseases were introduced into our food chain. Mm-hmm. And so if we go back to planting the lake, then maybe the wild rice will help us with that. That's an interesting tension. And I think you have to think about that if you live in the area. You should be mindful of the space that you occupy so that when you look at wild rice, you're not like, hey, this really ruins my sunset. It's like, no, I'm in conversation with the land and the people who've occupied it for thousands of years.
Yeah, and it's also like my property value is not, you know, that concern can coexist as well with, hey, these people's culture was completely torn from them. And also they need some, you know, natural food to eat that is not super highly processed or, you know, hard to access. So, yeah, that's really interesting stuff to think about all at once.
So imagine being a cottage owner in that area and not ever having to think about that. Like, to me, that would be a real crime, you know?
Yeah. So you close out the piece for Cottage Life saying, quote, as an immigrant, I can't say wanting a cottage is simple. It's not easy to see myself in the story of cottaging. You know, I wonder, you know, you and I are both millennials, you know, working as best we can in this journalism business. We just talked about the expensive nature of a cottage, but is this something you really want for yourself? And tell me about any complexity of feelings around that you might have.
Listen, the fact that you don't see a lot of people of color owning cottages, the fact that you definitely don't see a lot of millennials owning cottages, it's like not easy to sort of imagine myself as like, as a regular cottage owner. Like, you know, I don't think I'd look like the other cottage owners. So it's really difficult for me to imagine that. But then I think about, you know, what the people that I interviewed told me about the way that the cottage, begins to contain their space as a family, you know, mm-hmm. contain their family. Mm-hmm. And it just seems so beautiful to me. And also, like, there's nothing more like immigrant experience than, you know, building a shrine to your family and be like, this is a place that's gonna hold us as a family. And so, you know, one of the people that I interviewed, like, he owns this cottage with his three brothers, and they all go and all their children, and there's something like 9 children, and they all just share this massive, massive cottage. And that sounds like absolutely the dream, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so to me, I hear something like that, and I go like, yeah, when I think about the ways that my upbringing emphasized family and spending time together as a family, the cottage like seems like something to aspire to for sure. Whether I can ever afford it, let's check in 10 years.
How many siblings do you have? Just like get in there with like...
I'm an only child.
You're not.
I am. Which is
maybe you and I need to start our like cottage compound plan
now. Dude, let's do it. I'm in.
All right, start tomorrow. We're just going to open that bank account that will take a long time to fill.
Yes, it will.
So I'll see you in like 30, 40 years at the cottage.
Can't wait for our 50s at the cottage. It's going to be great.
Golden years.
Love it.
Thanks for coming on, Alamine.
My pleasure, pal.
Chill. Alamine Abdelmahmoud is a Toronto writer and also an editor at BuzzFeed. That was The Big Story. For more, visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca or on Twitter at thebigstoryfpn. Find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, make sure you leave us a rating and a review. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Sarah Bosvald, and Jordan's back in the chair on Tuesday. Have a great long weekend. I meant to say cheers. I said chill.
No, it's chill.
Chill. That's what chill. I sign up. Chill, dude.
Chill, 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 chill.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.